Hello, and welcome to Between Two Term Sheets, Canada's only podcast that invites investors and founders to discuss the early stage funding environment in the high technology space. Our host is Owen Matthews, founder, CEO, serial investor, and general partner at Wesley Clover International.
Thank you for joining us. And this week we're talking to Carl from Equisec, CEO, based here in Victoria, BC. And we're going to introduce him to an angel investor by the name of Scott Lake. So thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
All right. Well, Carl, tell us a little bit about yourself before we get into the exciting business of Equisec.
I'm tall, good looking.
It's a shame the audience can't see.
Very striking.
And the irony drips off the microphone.
I'm the CEO at Equisec. Equisec has existed for the last 4 years as this entity. Essentially, we're a location-based search engine for social media.
Perfect. We'll get into more detail on that. Scott, give us a quick introduction to your background and then we'll talk a little bit more about Equisec and some details and give us some advice around fundraising.
Sure. So my name is Scott Lake. I'm a startup entrepreneur. I'm best known for being a co-founder of Shopify. I currently run a seed investment fund called Hello Ventures, and I'm an active angel investor.
And a few co-investments along with us.
That's right.
At Wesley Clover. So thank you for taking the time to join us. Carl, thank you for subjecting yourself to the scrutiny of a few difficult to work with investors. But let's start. Give us an overview of what the business is, how you're doing, and you know, kind of who the customers are. You know, just a flavor for what market you're in.
We started off really in security, mostly. We'd go over a building. I think our catchphrase was, if you have a fence, you need a digital fence over your area, so that we would come back with a lot of people that were breaking their non-disclosure agreements and all those kind of fun things. Companies used us we did quite well at the beginning. It was quite an accelerated rate. Then we were sort of the terms of service for a couple of our feeds changed. And so we've had to kind of realign ourselves now more into finance and brands and journalism. And so we've reached out into that market over the last year, and it's been actually pretty amazing. I just came back from New York, was in Malibu before that, so really starting to take off.
So your target customers are in the business of security, they're in the business of journalism, protecting intellectual property. And this is all around the demonstration of social media based on geographic areas.
Yes.
So, unfortunately, it's a very visual product. It's easy to get when you get a chance to have a look at it. We're on a podcast, so that doesn't make that easy. But just describe, you know, what a user does with your tool.
Really simply, what you would do is just do a box around an area. So you'd have a map and you'd draw a little box on it. And we go through about a billion social posts every day. About 80 million of those are publicly available in geotags. So we're able to put all of those points on a map. So it really gives you an idea of what's happening on the ground in those specific areas. So if you're into branding, for instance, you can kind of filter things through. So if I did New York, it would come back with all the social posts from New York. If I was Verizon, I could go New York plus Verizon and it would come back with all the social posts related to Verizon around those areas. So it does a lot that most or any other tool that I know of doesn't do this. It's the perfect flip side of the coin to something like Hootsuite or Sprinklr.
Yeah. And just a question, why do your clients feel it's so important to know geography as opposed to just mentions and social and total?
Personalization, really. Localization, personalization, you need to be able to speak their language. People in New York actually speak differently than people in Shanghai and value things differently. So you're able to create targeted ads, for instance, that are very specific to a very specific audience, and you get a higher rate of return when you're doing those targeted ads.
And are they listening for how people are interacting with ads, or are they listening for brand mentions?
I think they're using it for the whole spectrum. I mean, I'm not one of the experts in this. Well, I'm the experts in driving the data, but I'm not an expert in actually using the data. But they're using it all the way from persona creation to actually executing ads specific to you in a specific area.
Oh, very
because obviously, I mean, we're in Victoria right now. It's very different than Vancouver, even geographically.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to drive to Vancouver to get a Jukes. You know, it's very.
I'll drive a Cadro Bay to get one.
So now that you're talking about advertising, but there are many other uses beyond advertising.
Many,
a lot of it has to do with situational awareness.
Yeah. Essentially, what all we are is a social media search engine. So anywhere in the world, and I mean anywhere, I mean North Korea, we're finding all kinds of social media. So it's whatever people are using it for, sometimes we're finding out that people are using it for things we never.
Yeah, that's what I was getting at.
You know,
the interesting pieces of technology always are, it's almost like a path of discovery by the founders as to what people are going to use it for.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, certainly a lot of that usage can lead you to business opportunities that you never thought existed.
Yeah. And we've got business partners. For instance, we've got a big company in the UK that is actively selling our product to groups that we wouldn't have conceived of. Arenas, stadiums, rental car agencies.
Interesting.
We would have never thought to actually go talk to these people.
Yeah.
But they are, now that it's kind of led us down a path, and now we're creating features to be able to support the functionality that they're looking for. So really, you have to really listen to your customers. Our whole analytics package comes from that. Really those conversations. So now when you go, aren't just coming back with a list of, you know, points on the map. We're coming back with, you know, how many of those points contain text? How many of them contain images? How many of them are related to this area? Who are my biggest talkers in that area? Is it Scott? Is Scott the person that I should be talking to? Or is it Owen? I mean, you know, and how to reach out to those people and what time of day they're actually posting on. So
I do have a question for you. So that sounds to me to be lots of different styles and types of data. How are you able to productize that, and how do you charge for it? Because I could see information like whether this is an image or text being of different value than if this is a specific brand mention of my product or a picture of it even. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, it's a SaaS-based system for starters.
Okay.
So, you know, monthly recurring revenue, obviously we have a pro version and an enterprise version of the software. So depending on how much usage, how much bandwidth you're going to use.
No amateur version?
What's that?
There's no amateur version?
No.
You have to be a pro.
I don't do
or
amateurs.
Enterprise.
Casual drop-in user.
Casual drop-in user. Weekend user. No. Sorry.
We did a podcast together once, kind of. Might get a free license for that. Yeah.
You did have a free version at one point. You still do?
We do. It's coming down very quickly because it's cutting into our other
stuff. Yeah, of course.
Yeah. And as well, pro version is going through a dramatic increase in price simply because it's cutting into our enterprise sales.
Yeah.
But these are things you learn. I mean, when we first met Owen, for instance, all we wanted to do was prove that we could sell it. And now we're proving that we could sell it, and we've got recurring revenue and all the rest of it. And, you know, we've gone through our little hiccups along the way.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's a question of how much we can sell it to, because the clients that we have are really high-end clients.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that struck me from the first time we spoke was the types of clients you guys were attracting, right? Because these are not clients that are mildly interested in the stuff. They are intensely interested in it. And and with that, it's sort of they're – and it's funny because one of the questions that I've always had about this company is how do you price for that, right? Because I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say this or not, but whatever. Let's say that one of your clients is using this to fight terrorism. That's a big, important thing, right? Someone else may be listening, using it to see if, you know, their ad is being mentioned in social. And that's an important thing, but let's just say it's not as important as fighting terrorism, right?
Yeah.
So theoretically, one is of much more value. Another one is of – the other is of a scale of value. Right. And so being able to appropriately price the product for the return that the client is getting is I would say varies quite a bit.
Or do you just do it like a Mac where it's one price for everybody across the board?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and then it's universally applicable. You don't have to worry about who's using it because everybody else can use it the same way.
No, but you may, in some situations, be leaving big money on the table.
Yep.
Or you may be outpricing clients that, a long tail of clients that would probably pay a lot of money. They just don't want to pay that much money.
Yeah.
Right. So that's the balance, right? Like, I don't know the answer to that question, but I'm always interested in anyone who's got some kind of insight into it.
Yeah, it's a challenge for sure, and I don't know how to answer that. We break it down even further in that we feel it's a bit of an obligation to have we have a greater good program, actually, for people like libraries.
Yeah.
Because it really is just a search engine.
Would you ever apply to us and get it for free. Yeah. Would you ever break it down by industry?
Yes, we currently.
Is it currently done by industry? It's not priced by industry, though, right?
Not priced by industry, okay. But you can hit a different bounce page on our website if you come in with specific keywords.
Right.
Yeah.
Is there any variability in pricing other than the programs? Is there like a usage-based pricing or anything like that?
No. It does go into the point, you know, all that being said, of course, if you come in and you're like, we want to look at the United States 24/7 for the next, you know, we have to charge. We'll have a different agreement on something like that.
Yeah.
You know, those sort of super sales that you occasionally get, but that is always just come talk to us.
Yeah.
Shake our hands. And,
So let's talk about funding needs. What kind of category would you be in? I mean, obviously the way you approach angel investors or the way you approach, early stage VC is quite different than say a later stage where you have product market fit and you have a clear ramp to revenue. Describe where what stage you're in and then we can talk about how you might approach investors and what advice we can provide to get you ready for that.
That's actually a great topic. We were down in Malibu 2 weeks ago, and they did a round table down there where it was actually the VCs pitching to us. And it was fascinating because all of a sudden we went from, you spend a day talking to somebody whose thesis doesn't suit, arranging the meeting, getting everything going. This was four people at a time at the table. Len organized it. And it was fascinating because geography matters as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like my conversations in Vancouver are very different than my conversations in Los Angeles, very different than my conversations actually in San Francisco. It makes a huge difference who you're talking to, where you're talking to them. And it seemed that we've kind of gone, we're not looking for seed funding anymore. We're obviously looking for more. And those people we are hitting, there is a sweet spot there between $5 and $10 million that we actually kind of stick right to. Now, what they want to see is more of, or what I think they were looking for was more, obviously more revenue. Everybody's always looking for more revenue, but they also wanted to see a really strong strategy on acquisitions, on how we would open up new markets, that kind of thing. So it was a really interesting way to do those kind of talks. And I probably saved myself 2 years worth of time by attending that one conference.
So
one talk, summit.
Let me just add something on that because one of the things, like in my experience, investors are interested in a ton of revenue, a ton of users, or a barrier to entry that's so high, it's an unfair advantage. Right, so I can see, revenue is easy. Users depends on what the product is, and it's different than a consumer product for sure. But when it comes to the barrier of entry, right, like that ideally is very high. So what's the unfair advantage that you bring to this process?
One big patent and 2 months pending.
There we go.
Yeah.
I think we get
very smart guys on the team.
Exactly.
And the IP strategy is huge.
I think you can also expand beyond that. You took protecting privacy of the individual very seriously.
Yeah.
So there's been a dramatic event in the past 6 months, is that about right, worth talking about, where as a company, they try to do the right thing. And I love the stories where when you're trying to do the right thing, it pays off for you. You know, there were some competitors in the market that were a little bit, you know, more interested in the money than necessarily doing the right thing. And they had some customers, and the customers were willing to pay the money.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that involved, you know, trampling a little bit on human rights.
Yeah.
And the supplier of the data didn't like that very much. And when it became, you know, known that some of the competitors were providing information and were kind of complicit in helping some of their customers sort of skirt human rights issues, you know, they got cut off and they got put out of business, essentially.
Yeah.
And, you know, here we have, you know, a great local company abiding by the strict privacy laws.
Perfect.
In Canada. And that made for a huge competitive advantage in that they're around and a lot of their competitors are not.
Mm-hmm.
So you should speak about that.
Yeah,
I mean, that was one of the big things when we first started this. Privacy's always been paramount to our company. I mean, just simply because we've had a privacy officer since day one. We've worked with the ex-privacy commissioner of British Columbia, the ex-privacy commissioner of Alberta. And it saved us. It really did. It was what enabled us to go around the world, first of all. And then when our American counterparts, who honestly were able to pull off a lot of things that we weren't, because they were doing a lot of stuff server side that we have never been able to do. We draw directly, more or less directly, from the data providers themselves. So that way, if something's, if you decide to delete a tweet, then it's deleted there. Or if you decide to make your stuff private, then it's made private instantly. Mm-hmm. We don't hold on to it at all.
Yeah.
And that made a huge difference. And it makes a huge difference now as we're rolling into these new markets, because we do want to be very cognizant of people's privacy.
Right.
Yeah.
So a competitive advantage worth mentioning, and I just love the stories that when you do the right thing, it ends up paying off.
Yeah,
for you.
Yeah.
It
makes me happy. It makes you feel good for the initial pain and suffering that usually entails.
Exactly.
Well, a lot of people that come to you and they go, well, can you do this? And of course, I mean, it's tech. Of course you can do it. But do you want to ethically do that?
Yeah.
Are you going to come back as a cockroach in the next life?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not. Some things just aren't worth it.
And it did lead to a few recognition points worth mentioning. You know, you guys received a civic duty award from the police department for you know, for saving lives and the stories associated with this technology.
I wish we could tell you.
Yeah, the stuff that
I'm sure there's some amazing stuff.
The stuff that that has happened is pretty exciting, and thankfully we're always on the right side of the fence. Now let's talk. We've got a few minutes left. Let's talk about funding. How do you prepare yourself to raise money for this type of company, and you know who you approach and how you approach them? I think we should spend a few minutes talking about that, because that's really important, and I think that's why a lot of people tune in here.
I think now we are having a lot more people approach us, and you have to be very careful of your time and make sure that it's a good fit. You know, we're not looking for seed, but I have a lot of seed companies or venture firms ping me on a regular basis. You know, you got to make sure that you're a good fit with them for us. That's the number one thing. And then, I mean, asking the right questions. Do you take a seat on the board? Are you, is it a convertible note, or is it equity? Is it, you know, you have to have a list of questions for them as well. So a lot of, other than our deck, which I think everybody can go on the internet and figure out how to do a Kawasaki, you know, 8-slide deck, but it's more the questions that you're going to get into afterwards.
So it's interesting, because what I've seen a few companies do lately is pre-plan what they want their financing to be and how they want it to look. And then when an analyst or a partner or whoever gets in touch, rather than having them kind of tell you what they want to do, it's the opposite. It's the company saying, look, here's what we're looking for. We're looking for, you know, $2 million to be in this format and
qualify yourself.
And qualify yourself.
So we're not spending a lot of cycles.
Exactly, right? Because one of the things that I've seen is analysts will keep pinging you, asking you questions, updates, literally forever. You know.
Well, that's part of the thing that a lot of investors don't necessarily make clear up front. It's not in their interest to make clear up front.
Yeah.
It's very hard to get to know with a VC, I mean, N-O, not K-N-O-W, get to know. Because something might change in the next 6 months. It dramatically changes their appetite to invest.
Totally.
So you very rarely get a hard no.
Yeah.
Right? You're getting a lot of, that's interesting. Give me some more. I got to keep you in the funnel because I don't know what's going to happen in the next 6 months.
So for anyone who's been in sales, and I've been in sales a long time, it's actually easier to get to know faster if you put forward the terms, right?
Yeah.
And so the benefit to that is you don't get the I'm interested, but I want to wait and see, right? Which is actually generally it's a no, right? Unless
it's also a huge waste of time.
It's a huge waste of time, right? So the I can remember cold calling, with the first software startup I was ever involved with, and it was, are you sure you don't need this product? Can you confirm right now that you will never need this product? That's a no? Okay, thanks. Yeah. Never spend any more time, right? And I think it's a lot. There is some benefit to that in the investing world as well, which is, I mean, you can't dictate all the terms, but you should have a good idea what the terms that you want are.
Yeah.
And part of the first conversation is if we ever did get to yes, would these terms be acceptable or possible?
Yeah.
And if the answer is no, and you know that you don't want to go and do that, some other form, then it's better to just move on.
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely agree.
Yeah, which is good.
You have to knock on a lot of doors to get to the right fit. The people that know your market, like your market, are comfortable with the risk, have capital in the right area, have the capital available for the period of time that, even if a fund has, is the exact type of fund that you want, and they're the exact stage, they like to invest in that stage. If they're 3 years into the fund and you're a little bit early for them, they don't have the 4 years it takes to get you through.
The timing's not going to work.
Yeah.
Well, in the Westland Clover, worked extremely well for us, but we did a lot of homework before we even engaged really with those kinds of conversations. We wanted to know what your network was, I came to you originally just looking for a general. I thought for sure we were going to, honest to God, I needed an actual military general. That's why I talked to Owen. which he did provide. but it had nothing to do with funding to begin with. It came later once we started talking about, okay, you have a network that includes a general.
It's about the mission to try and make the company succeed.
Yeah.
And that's what, nobody makes any return unless, that's what happens. And that's where our focus is. And that's the heart and soul of the investor. Even those that think a little bit more short term, the company still has to succeed.
Yeah.
So let me ask you a question. What is the type of deal that you would be looking for?
Right now we're looking for, basically a company or a fund that would be between 5 and 10, have probably strong roots in the U.S., primarily sales focused now. We've gone past the R&D stage and past the development stage. So it would be a sales focused company. I have a very hard time finding good salespeople in Canada, so it'd be more likely that we would go to the U.S. to be able to do something like that.
Sure.
And again, with an international focus, Westland Clover has an international focus, worked out really well for us. But just because we have SaaS-based software that's so applicable everywhere we happen to go. I mean, we were in Shanghai a couple of months ago. Shanghai has the population of Canada. I mean, we can do business under that,
It could be a Shanghai company.
But I want to be able to do business globally, and that'll drive up our value. So,
perfect. Well, we're wrapped up. Any final thoughts? Thanks again for
thank you,
Scott, for joining us and Carl for talking about your company today. Any closing thoughts before we say goodbye? None from Scott.
I'm good.
All right,
I've got it all in.
Thanks, everybody.
So that's it for today's show. You've been listening to Between Two Term Sheets. This episode is brought to you by Alacrity Global, which brings investors, academic institutions, entrepreneurs, and governments together to create technology startup funds around the globe. Go to alacrityglobal.com to find out more about Alacrity's initiative. And be sure to tune in again to next week's show.